Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome everyone to Hidden Growth Champions, our podcast series. In our studio today, we've got Fahim Moussa. Fahim, you've been involved in the consulting industry in various guises, both as a consultant yourself, as an owner of a consulting business, as well as an advisor to consulting business owners. So welcome to our virtual studio. It's great to have you here. Very much looking forward to our conversation. Perhaps you can tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks for the introduction, Sar, and thanks for having me at the studio. As you said, Sar, I've been involved in the consulting industry in various guises. My consulting journey started off way back in 2006, where I started working in corporate consulting and management consulting in Toronto, Canada. And that kind of led me into starting my own management consulting business in 2009, where I focused on strategic planning for academic institutions, typically those that wanted to bring research and development, commercialize research and development from their universities and bring those innovations to market. So I did a lot of strategic planning work for academic institutions in my time as a management consultant, and have worked with several small, mid-sized and large organizations across 30 different industries, helping them with strategic planning and business planning. And over the past few years, I've also, I started helping other management consulting business owners to grow their consulting businesses by instituting sales and marketing systems into their business. The reason I started doing that is because in our community, in the management consulting community, a lot of consultants are really good at what they do. They're excellent at delivering client work and delivering engagements, but they don't have the necessary expertise in marketing and sales to drive growth. So that's the gap I fill in our community.
No, it's fascinating. I'm sure we'll delve into many of these aspects as the conversation goes. Fahim, let's maybe start off with a question that kind of comes off or across my desk rather often, and that's looking at ideal clients. It's a term that's kind of stuck in the consulting industry, but it's probably one of the least understood terms. I've seen organizations that are broad, some even not having a clear focus, struggling at times even to describe their own organizations. Talking about ideal clients, I've seen and worked with niche consulting organizations that have got a very clear sense of who the ideal client is. But it's one of these terms that we're quick to speak and less so commonly understand. So when I had to ask you, when we speak about ideal clients, what does it really mean? And why does the concept of an ideal client really matters?
Sure. So let me just take a step back and introduce the idea of timing, or the stage your consulting business is in. So your ideal client, the concept of your ideal client depends, I believe, on the stage your business is in. Because typically in a professional services and specifically a consulting, management consulting business, our business is driven initially by warm introductions and referrals. So when typically a consultant starts his or her business, they reach out to their network to land clients, right? So, and they use skills that they may have learned and acquired in the corporate world over many, 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 many years of working in the corporate world to deliver engagements. So typically in the early days of a new consulting business, consultants typically take business, whatever business they can, depending on their network, right? So sometimes what happens is in the first few years of a consulting business, you're kind of doing five different types of projects or engagements for five different types of clients. For example, a consultant may have operational experience. They may have been a COO in a past life, and now they started a consulting business. They may get an engagement where they're asked to kind of put together systems, operational systems for a business. And then that may turn into maybe a project management kind of engagement. Then the client may find that this consultant has some financial expertise as well. So they say, hey, why don't you do some financial modeling for us, et cetera, et cetera. And then that same consultant may get another referral from somewhere else where they could apply part of their expertise to deliver another client engagement. So when consultants talk about ideal clients, it's important to understand the stage they're in. I believe that if you're under 3 years into your consulting, starting your consulting business, the core necessity at that time is to keep the lights on, right? And it's okay to be a generalist at that point, to kind of dip your toe in the water and see what's out there and do various kinds of projects. It's absolutely fine if a consulting business owner is in that stage, because typically that's fine. But then there comes a time when you're doing well, you have various types of projects, various types of clients, and that can, and then you kind of, you know, that can weigh on you. That can, like, you know, because you're required to mentally switch from one type of engagement to another type of engagement, which is totally different. A project management type of engagement to a business development engagement, for example, right? And that can be really hard for a lot of reasons. I already talked about it can be mentally kind of overwhelming. It can also not be very profitable because you're not known for one thing, doing one thing. So you kind of, you know, just take on projects for any type of fee that is offered to you. So it's not very profitable as well. And it's not scalable as well, because to scale your business, you need to have a focus typically, because when you want to grow your business, you'll need to have a marketing plan to grow your business. And you can't have a marketing plan if you don't have a focus, because who are you going to market to? Who are you going to speak? Who's your messaging going to speak to? How are you going to acquire customers? So in order to transition from that initial phase where you're kind of you're a generalist, and then grow your business, you need to transition into being a specialist, right? So that's when you need to really think about, okay, so I've done 5 different types of projects with 5 different types of clients. Where is my strength at? What am I great at? What kind of results can I produce effortlessly, right? And who derives the most value out of my business and out of my expertise and my skills, or my team's skills? And where can I derive the most value and charge a fee that is commensurate to the value that I bring, right? So those are questions that lead you to an ideal client, right? So when you say, okay, that what's the concept of an ideal client, question usually appears a little later in your consulting business. And it's a function of a lot of these factors that I mentioned, like where do you provide the most value, what's the need that you can fulfill the most, what are the trends in the industry that tell me that, you know, this specific type of client or this specific type of engagement is growing, and there is an unmet need for this type of client and, you know, type of engagement. So that's where my belief and understanding is about what an ideal client should be and how you should transition from the initial days to the next phase of your business.
Now I imagine, Fahim, when I think about larger consulting organizations and the kind of changes we've seen since the pandemic, they might be thinking about ideal clients as well differently, right? The kind of the days in which we could count ideal clients as the one who bring in the most revenue, the ones that are kind of ring-fenced within specific kind of partner arrangements, that's also being challenged. So the concept of ideal client is a dynamic one. And to your point, it's not the same. The answers may not be the same today as it was 3 or 5 years ago. So with that kind of in mind, what is the biggest challenge that you see consulting business owners face when they have to define or decide on who their ideal client is?
Well, I think it's a function of understanding the expertise that a consulting business owner or a firm brings to the table. It also is an understanding of the unmet needs in the marketplace and the skills that, you know, the firm brings to the table. So if you take those two things, like the expertise / skills and unmet needs, those are the factors that consulting business owners need to consider. And the more important piece among those two things is the unmet needs, because the market is what drives growth. So your idea, when a consulting business owner is challenged or is looking to define an ideal client, they can start with your expertise. They can start with a focus or that is internal. But at the end of the day, there has to be a market for it, because at the end of the day, they're running a business. So if there isn't an unmet market need in that area that is ripe for growth, that is underserved, then picking an ideal client based on the skill that you have alone may not be the most prudent way to go. So I guess what I'm saying is that, yes, your expertise and skills are obviously important, but you have to match those with the market needs. And so the biggest challenge that I see consulting business owners face is having a lack of understanding about marketing in general, right? So this comes down to business skills. Consulting business owners typically are technical people that have a skill in a specific area. It could be operations, it could be finance, it could be project management, change management, whatever the case may be. But then when they start a business, they become business owners. And that requires a certain level of business acumen and an understanding of marketing and an understanding of sales. So when those concepts are not fully understood, there is a high chance that consulting business owners may make the wrong call. I mean, it's all part of the learning, of course, but then in order to make the right decisions, my belief is that, you know, as a business owner, you must learn marketing and sales, because those are the two areas, the functional business areas that allow you to drive sales and revenue. So a lack of understanding of those two areas, even a basic understanding, can be a big disadvantage. Now, of course, the argument can be made that a business owner or a consultant, you know, it's best that they focus on what they do best and kind of either bring in someone who's a marketer or a salesperson, or even outsource that function and let them handle it. Now, I agree that there is, you know, value in that, but then there's a time and place for that, right? Immediately when you start your business and when you're trying to grow it, it's important for the consulting business owner to understand for themselves what drives their business in terms of, you know, their own expertise and skills, and also in terms of what the market wants. And that for that, you'll need to understand how to derive customer insights, how to do a little bit of market research to understand, you know, current states and desired states of the market. How do you put together an offering that makes sense for the market? How do you communicate value? How do you communicate the value of that offering to the market? These are all part of the repertoire of a marketer. And then, not to mention, how do you approach prospects and have a conversation that allows you to talk about, you know, what you can do for them and really, you know, build value into that conversation? All of these things are skills that business owners need. And without these skills, it's easy to make, you know, take a misstep with respect to deciding who that ideal client is or which market segment you want to go for, and so on and so forth. So that's what I feel the biggest challenge is for business owners.
One of the terms that you've introduced in working with myself and my team has been the concept of a big promise. And why I really liked it was it kind of forced us to think, rethink, challenge ourselves as to what value do we really bring into client organizations, and not just the immediate value, but what, you know, what's the second and third order effects? What could become possible once we take that first step into the future? So with that in mind, help us to understand when we practice this kind of thinking, when we talk deliberately, openly with clients about the promise and what it could mean. Tell us a little bit about why do you think that's important, and what kind of results have you seen organizations are able to make when they have that conversation?
Sure. So here's the thing, like our industry or the sector, or however you define it, it's part of professional services, right? So management consulting is part of professional services, and that is part of the problem, right? A lot of people think that we provide services, right? It's like a plumber coming into your home, they provide a service. So it's like any other, like an architect providing a service and so on and so forth. The distinction that, you know, I'm trying to bring in to the market is that we're not just service providers, because clients don't buy services, they buy outcomes, they buy results, right? Now, when you walk into a store to buy a product, let's say you're in the home improvement market and you walk into a store in the market for a hammer, you go in and you buy the hammer and you walk out with something tangible. You can feel it, you can see it, you can touch it. And that is a result. You paid for something and you got a result. You can see it and you can touch it. But in our business, we're selling intangibles at the end of the day. And that can be a problem because a lot of clients don't understand what they're getting. When you just simply say that, yes, I'm going to come in and perform a service. I'm going to do market research and show you something. I'm going to do some financial analysis and I'm going to give you a bunch of numbers. I'm going to do a data analytics consultant and I'm going to, you know, run some large numbers and give you an Excel file, for example, right? So when you position yourself as a service provider, that is simply not fully understood. And that's part of the problem of not knowing how to do marketing and sales, right? Because this is a positioning issue, and positioning is a huge topic in marketing. That's why I come back to the fact that, you know, as a business owner, as a consulting business owner, especially, you want to understand the basics of marketing. So, and once you do that, you'll realize that clients and customers want results, right? It's not something that intuitively comes to you when you're running a business, but as you learn a lot more about marketing and sales and positioning and, you know, creating an offering and messaging and communication and so on and so forth, you'll realize that customers want results. They purchase outcomes. They don't purchase services. So the distinction here is that instead of being a service provider, you want to become an outcome provider. And so that leads you to the next phase of, okay, what outcome can I provide? And when you ask that question, automatically you'll want to understand, okay, what outcomes do my clients want? What are they in the market for? What are their challenges right now? What have they tried before that hasn't worked? What options do they have on the table that in terms of solving their problem that they don't particularly like? What are they looking for? What are their goals? What do they want to win? What do they want to achieve with their business or the organization or their department? What are they trying to escape from, right? So going into the market and understanding all of these questions will allow you to then think about, okay, here's how I can put together an offering that is a true outcome that solves my clients, my potential clients' problems and takes them from their current state to a desired state, and it helps them achieve their goals. So that's the journey that you want to be going through in order to position yourself in the market as a provider of outcomes, not just services. And let's take this one step further, right? Okay, the question is, how can you position yourself, and what kind of outcomes can you provide? Now in business, I believe that everything can be, any kind of outcome can be tied to revenue or cost savings or other metrics. Like, for example, there are examples of outcomes can be increased revenues. It could be increased volume. It could be reduced cost. It could be cost containment. It could be displaced costs. It could be increased motivation of employees, which you could then relate to, you know, a higher productivity, which could then be related to higher efficiency and better productivity. It could also, an outcome could be decreased absenteeism, for example, which again, you know, relates to the outcome of increased efficiency and productivity. So in business, if you're helping an organization, you can always kind of relate that to some hard result. And even if you're, let's say, a leadership consultant, right? If you're helping companies improve their culture, or if you're helping companies improve their brand, for example, like there are multiple studies that talk about the outcomes or the implications of a bad culture on the bottom line. So, and there are multiple studies talking about all of these so-called soft issues that leadership consultants typically face that can be tied into the bottom line. So, you know, as a business owner, you want to understand how all of these issues relate to the bottom line and then put together an offering that talks about outcomes. And then you can have an intelligent and a useful conversation with a buyer, with a business buyer who has various pressures at work that they need to kind of improve, right? And when you talk in terms of hard outcomes and big promises to buyers, that's a more productive conversation than going in and saying, hey, you know what? I'm a leadership consultant and I'm here to sell you 4 workshops and, you know, give you a report in the end or something like that, right? So you really want to have a useful and productive business conversation with your buyer where you talk about promises and where you talk about change and where you talk about, you know, real outcomes. So I hope that helps, Sar.
No, very, very much. Now, I don't think we can talk about marketing or even sales in the current environment without mentioning technology, right? This is an area where we've grown by leaps and bounds. I mean, I was speaking to a client earlier this afternoon where we spoke about, you know, consulting has turned into becoming borderless. In the old days, we were miles away, you know, comparing ourselves to much larger organizations. You could set up offices in new countries. You could enter new markets. And today with technology, a lot of things that were possible, both from a marketing as well as a sales perspective, are now available to much smaller organizations. So talk to us a little bit about how has technology, and particularly digital tools, have changed the world of the consultant, have changed the world of the consulting business owner who may be looking at ideal clients in geographies or market sectors that are perhaps not as much physically within reach.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite topics, really. And I think the phenomenon has simply accelerated over the past couple of years, what with the pandemic and everything. It was a trend that was always going in favor of digital technology and marketing in general, promoting services using digital technology, but it simply has accelerated. And there's lots of research done on the topic over the past year or so, but it has simply accelerated the trend. What has happened is that, let's look at it in terms of buyers and influencers, for example. Like there in any sales situation, you have the buyers and you have the sponsor, you have, you know, influencers, right? And influencers, when I say influencers, I'm talking about those that are around, those that have influence over buyer in an organization, right? Mm-hmm. Or multiple buyers in an organization. And these tend to be folks in, if you're looking at, you know, mid to large organizations, these tend to be folks in, you know, the director level positions, or, you know, or maybe a junior VP, for example, so on and so forth. So, and these folks are, you know, typically, and I'm speaking very generally over here, but I'm trying to make a broad point, is that they're typically, okay, let's say from 35 to 45 years old, and that's very close to being native digital. Native digital is a term where people in that range, or in that, you know, people who've grown up with digital tools. Right. So as these influencers and some buyers as well, you know, are get more and more kind of in positions where they take decisions on purchasing services and purchasing anything on behalf of a company or organization, you know, it's really it's important to kind of recognize the fact that you need as a seller of services or products or whatever, you need to be in front of people. You need to be in front of people where they are, where they're at, right? And these folks are looking at digital screens, right? So the buying journey over the past few years has rapidly shifted to essentially it starts online. When we talk about the buying journey, it's about, you know, the whole phase of awareness, interest, desire, and action. People become aware of service providers and firms and sellers predominantly online, much way more than the past. And because, you know, the folks that I've described are more and more online, it's important for organizations, firms, consulting firms to be online and to create awareness online. Now, I understand that in a lot of larger organizations, C-level folks and higher people are higher up, they may not be looking online. I totally get that. But a lot of the influencers are definitely online. And the way decisions are made in organizations, it's not like one person is making the decisions. There's a recent research that has pointed out that in any B2B organization, there's an average of 6.8 people making a decision. That includes, sometimes when deals go into procurement, et cetera. And also, even if it's a deal that's not in the procurement department, there are a bunch of people that kind of have influence over that decision. And a lot of these people are folks that are listening to podcasts, are watching informational and educational videos on YouTube. They are on LinkedIn trying to find resources and trying to learn. And they're doing various kinds of online courses to further their business and their career. So you want to be front and center in these channels, because that's where awareness is really hot right now in B2B. So in that respect, as a consulting firm, as a consulting business owner, you want to make sure that you choose channels that make sense for your type of client that you're targeting, and create awareness in those channels so that when buyers are ready, not just awareness, but also connections and build relationships, so that when buyers and influencers and organizations are ready, they will remember you and reach out to you.
Fahim, maybe with that in mind, and speaking about relationships, one of the things that you've introduced is a community, an online community, which I've been part of, as well as other consulting business owners. And I guess my question kind of goes to the kind of insights that consulting business owners from different parts of the world, from different backgrounds, bring into the conversation. What have you found as your community has grown, beyond the kind of North American base where you started off, and is now much more diverse?
Yeah, that's the beauty of, marketing yourself online. Like, you're in South Africa right now, and my business primarily targeted Canadian and US businesses. But because of the fact that I market myself and I build so much awareness online, I get inquiries from all across the world. And I've, in the last 3 years, I've had clients from every single continent except two, right? And one of them is Antarctica. And I never expected that, right? So when you're out there and you're building awareness, you will get interest from places that you don't typically, get clients from. And that's where, that's the beauty of being part of the digital channels and creating awareness in them. So that's happened. And as a result of that, I've got clients, all over the world. And we have this community that we part of. And every week, as you know, we meet up and we discuss issues that are related to growing a consulting business, and people chip in. They talk about experiences. They talk about, results from activities that they are doing with respect to marketing and sales. And it definitely brings out diverse voices and activities and personalities and ways of working that add to the learning, right? Like, so now with a community, you're not just learning from me, whose community it is, but you're learning from all these other voices as well. And that, leads to a situation where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, right? So sometimes in these communities, what happens is somebody will ask a question related to where they're at, and then the others have the benefit of listening to the response to that question. And sometimes it's a question that you may have had at the back of your mind, but you may not have been able to articulate it and ask the question, and somebody else has asked it. And sometimes it's a question that you may not have thought of, but somebody has asked the question and you've benefited from the response. So just the benefit of being a part of a community is that in itself, where you get various voices and various types of questions, and you're able to kind of participate in that discussion. And of course, there's, you know, there's the whole issue about selling and marketing in various types of economies and markets. Like, for example, like, you know, you and Ascent, Sar, you focus a lot on emerging markets, right? You guys are, you do a fantastic job serving emerging markets. A lot of the consultants, a lot of other consultants that are in the North American market may not know too much about the those markets. So as you talk about them, they learn about those markets and potential opportunities. At the same time, when we talk about, you know, North American markets and how business is done in this part of the world, that's an opportunity for someone like you and some of the others in other markets to understand a few things that you may not have been aware of, right? So that eclectic mix of people really adds to the learning. And at the end of the day, right, like the purpose of the community is to further the consulting business owners' understanding of marketing and sales and growth. So like I said, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Indeed. Yeah. You know, perhaps another segment that I guess is worth mentioning and we've seen more and more come to the fore is the younger audience. You know, I've kind of grown up in a consulting industry where, you know, you're kind of growing in the industry through age. You get to a certain age where you can be a partner, a decision maker, in particularly in larger consulting organizations. And that kind of speaks to the kind of experience and kind of layered understanding that you gain by years and years of experience in various markets, invariably. We see more and more, particularly over the past decade, of younger entrepreneurs, younger business owners who are not just challenging the paradigm in the industry itself, but are bringing younger thinking that challenges what we think is possible. We've seen it in our own work, particularly our last ESG report, which was literally written by students, interns in our organization, and there's one wider claim. And I've recently seen it in industry property, for example, in an industry we do a lot of work in, where two young founders came out of the firm, the very well-known fintech organization, to establish kind of a fractional ownership business, all online, all digital, and really talking to a very specific challenge. When you kind of look at these two owners, they're in the mid-20s. They've taken the brave decision of coming out of the, I don't want to say a corporate, but certainly a more kind of organized, more established environment, doing something completely new without a safety net in the way that you and I would speak of it. So when you think of that younger, very bold, challenging, you know, segment of the consulting and more broadly the services business owner, what would you want to share with them in terms of your learnings of working with business owners in this sector? What do you think will be most relevant to them?
Well, I think the first thing that I would say to them is focus on client results, focus on outcomes. Again, bringing it back to that topic, because it's really easy to forget about why you're in the business in the first place. Just provide some services and then off you go. But at the end of the day, you know, if you want to build a profitable business, a consulting business, typically the real profits come over time in year two and year three. So you want to have a relationship with a client for at least 3 years, 2 or 3 years. That's when you'll be able to really build a profitable relationship and valuable relationship for the client as well, where the client gets immense value from having you on board and you get value from having the client on board, right? So that's what you want to aim for, because the first year could be, you know, you're getting to know the client, they're getting to know how you work, et cetera, et cetera. And you don't want to end a relationship in just a few months, right? So if you're from a consulting perspective, typically a management consulting perspective, you go from project to project, right? So it's in the best interest of a new consulting business owner or a firm to increase the lifetime value of that customer, because the real profits come in year two, year three. So, and the only way to do that, and the best way to do that, is to make sure that your clients get real value. And how do you make sure that they get real value? Is that you provide them with an outcome that they want, that moves the needle for their business, that makes them successful, that makes them realize and, you know, understand that you have got them that value. That when they see that you've brought them value, they obviously want to keep you on and learn more from you and get more outcomes from you. So that's what I would have new businesses focus on. Just focus on your clients' results. It's about your clients. Can you get them results? Can you get them outcomes? If you can, then you will build a successful business, provided there is an opportunity. It's a growing market and it's underserved and, you know, all the other factors that we talked about. But it all comes down to results and outcomes.
Fahim, thank you for a great conversation. Thank you for sharing insights with us and spending time with us on Hidden Growth Champions.
This has been a lot of fun. Thank you for the opportunity, Sara.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.